It was almost 5 years ago now. I barely got going. I was a mere quarter of a mile from home, and as I went around the corner, just near Graham's house, the unthinkable happened. Bang! I was on the floor. The knee on my trousers was kind of shredded and had turned a nice shade of red. My bike pedal was kind of bent and the handlebars no longer straight. And I was confused. What had happened? I wasn't going too fast. There wasn't a car nearby. The closest one was 30 yards away. The lady got out of that car to check that I was okay. I still don't understand what happened. Maybe there was some black ice, maybe there was some oil on the road. What I do know is that my bike had suddenly just disappeared from underneath me and my knee hurt. But I'm tough, and so, like any sensible person wouldn't do, I pulled the handlebars straight, got back on my bike and rode off to work, cleaned up the blood and showered off. All was okay, I thought, until a couple of weeks later, when I woke up in the morning. While the skin on my knee had recovered, my knee hurt. It hurt more than it had ever done before in my life. It was red, it was swollen, and it was even hot to the touch. If you can imagine, Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, except this was John, the red-kneed accountant, had a very shiny knee, kind of glowing. It wasn't funny, I can assure you. I struggled downstairs and quickly realised that I wasn't going to be going anywhere that day, and gradually realised I wasn't going anywhere that week. I couldn't walk. I couldn't drive. I couldn't, well, even go upstairs. It was really painful, like one step at a time, incredibly slowly. And I began to imagine, what's life going to be like if this is a permanent injury? If I've done something now so bad to it that I'm not going to be recovering from this? What's going to happen if it doesn't heal? And that kind of future didn't look good. Would I ever be able to make it to work again? Now, how could I look after Jennifer and the kids? Would I ever be fit and healthy again? What impact would that have on the rest of my health? Would I need to just change my car and get an automatic? Fine, but I can't afford that. And what about church? How could God use me there in the church if I was unable to even hobble around? So much of my identity and my value was tied up in my health and my strength that now I was feeling like I was no use to anyone at all. I was used to being the one who helped everyone else, and I wasn't dependent on anyone. And I've mostly been like that since I was a teenager. Others could be dependent on me, I'd help them out, I'd rescue stuff, but I wasn't dependent on others. Why, God? Why? I prayed this probably every time I got a little bit of change in the pain levels. Why, God? When I read passages in the Bible, like the one which Andy read today, I could tell you that being weak and dependent on God is a good thing. But that wasn't how I felt. You see, Paul here was delighting in his weakness, and I most certainly did not delight in my weakness and in my pain. Paul prayed three times that this thorn in the flesh will be taken away. And it says like 14 years that he's talking about that he had this. And I prayed more like 3,000 times, and that was just in the first week. The problem was, it wasn't what I believed in my head, because I believed all the right things, but it was what I kind of believed in my heart. I believed that God could use me and work in spite of my weakness, but my belief in my heart just felt a little bit more like bitterness that I was struggling to walk. And now, 5 years later, I still have to be careful with my knee, but God has used the passage of time to mostly heal it. I'd love to be able to say I can look back and tell of all the wonderful things that God has taught me through the pain. But I can't. Probably it means I'm just not a very good learner. I still don't understand why God allowed it to happen. But by faith, I believe that God had some higher purpose. Maybe to protect me from something much worse that day. I don't know. Probably I'll never know. But that is a bit of what faith is all about. Not needing to know the reason, but just trusting God in the midst of those difficulties. And I appreciate that the difficulties that my knee has caused me may be insignificant compared to what you might be going through now. And I'm truly grateful to God for having been generally blessed with good health and strength. But I do have a daily, hourly, however long, really frequent reminder that I'm no superhero and that I'm never going to be. I am dependent on God. I could go on to tell you of other struggles in life, about how as a teenager I really struggled with the fact that I had short sight. I have to wear glasses. And as far as I was concerned, that probably made me the ugliest kid in the school. Yeah, I was quite possibly right on that one, but no amens on that, please. And that was how I felt about it. And I prayed many times that God would heal my eyesight because I didn't want to be wearing these things. But you can guess how effective my prayers for healing were on that one. I could tell you the struggles that Jennifer and I have with our children. I know you all think they're angelic and wonderful children. But, and the problems we have with them are probably no worse than any of the others of you would have with your children. But they have helped teach me so much love and patience and even anger management. I was sure that anger was something I would never struggle with until they came along. But it wasn't really them making me angry. All they were doing was revealing the anger that was really there inside of me and just hitting the right pressure points and forcing me to deal with it. Now, this morning I asked Jennifer if she'd be willing to share as well a little bit about her struggles with migraines. She hates speaking in public, so she used the excuse of going to Sunday school to get away with it. But she did write something for me to share with you, and I'll read what she wrote. If you know Jennifer, her general policy is why say something in 10 words when you can use 1,000? But she, she does speak very fast, so you'll have to imagine it as her speaking. Like several others in the church, I suffer from migraines. For those of you who don't already know, a migraine is not a normal headache. It's a neurobiological disorder that can cause nausea, neck stiffness, difficulty concentrating, blurred vision, excessive fatigue, sensitivity to light, noise, movement and touch, in addition to excruciating head pain, usually on one side. The things that trigger a migraine can vary from person to person, although some are more typical, like perfume and bright lights and stress. My migraines typically run for 3 to 4 days. Fortunately, I live in a time when there are some wonderful medications available, so I can choose up to 3 days in a row that I can treat the head pain and nausea. And as a result, I try not to schedule anything for more than 3 days in a row, and often my 3 days are spent in pain. You don't see me when I have an unmedicated migraine, because I'm lying very still in a dark room with ice on my head, trying not to be sick. When the migraine is developing, I have a growing sense of dread for the inevitable pain, and I start calculating whether I should medicate or if I should suffer that day so I can function for the next 3. I know I will have to let someone down or drop some responsibility, and I want to cry with despairing self-loathing. At the worst points in a migraine, when I'm too sick to move and it hurts to the point of tears just to think, I've wanted to cease existing just so the pain would stop. This is nowhere near the most difficult thing a person can endure, but it is my personal thorn in the flesh. Since we save the worst for those who love us best, my family has to bear the brunt of it. My kids have been abandoned by me for entire days because I was too sick to move. John has learned to act as a single parent at the drop of a hat. Other people have offered to help, but it's easier to abuse the patience of family members than to ask a favour of someone who might agree only because they're too polite to refuse. A few weeks ago, I woke up with a migraine, and the medication didn't work. John left for work late because I couldn't get the kids out of the door for school, and then I had to lie downstairs waiting for the grocery delivery, which couldn't be cancelled. And here is a mercy from God. The delivery came at the beginning of the one-hour slot, and when I threw up moments after opening the door, and was very embarrassed and apologetic, the kind delivery man told me that he suffered from migraines as well and helped me to get the cold things put away so I could lie down again as soon as possible. Because of my migraines, I have occasionally experienced the wonder of immediate healing when others have prayed. I've also learned to see God's grace in times when he hasn't intervened and I remained in pain. Millions of little mercies, the children getting along that day, something being cancelled before we have to ask, regular responsibilities being removed unexpectedly. So many little things that teach me, in my weakness, how to let go. When I've been rendered physically incapable of doing anything, I've seen his love in the way that he has lifted from my shoulders the burdens I thought I had to carry. And when my health is restored, it is easier to leave those things with him. Weakness teaches us stubborn, strong-willed people that we simply cannot do it all by ourselves, no matter how we delude ourselves into thinking we can. After years of migraines, I hope I have learned that I never accomplish anything in my own strength, and that it is foolish to attempt it. Because I am weak, I know it is God's strength, not my own. My ability to function each day is a gift from God. But I don't feel weak all the time. I can go for days, sometimes even a fortnight, without a migraine. And while my thorn in the flesh teaches me to trust him in my weakness, the intermittent nature of it teaches me to make good use of the healthy time I'm given. I am inherently lazy. I have the ability to procrastinate with a defiance to the law of the passage of time that has frustrated my parents, my teachers, my husband, my friends, my children, and myself. I am also easily distracted and very forgetful. I set reminders, create artificial deadlines to induce motivating last-minute panic, make strict schedules and routines, tell other people what I'm supposed to do so I can't weasel out of it, and pack all my childhood anxiety and fear of failure into each commitment to frighten me out of quitting. And while all of that helps, nothing is actually as motivating as a migraine. Give me a whole week of good health, and after the first few days, I'll waste much of it because time seems unlimited. Throw in a migraine and suddenly I'm reminded, in an undeniable way, that my time is very much limited. I'm motivated to work while there is light, because I've just come out of a period of darkness. And then, for a while at least, my work is done out of gratitude to God for health again. God uses my weakness to teach me to rely on his strength, but also to use the strength he's given me while I can. That's Jennifer's reflection on her migraines. I struggle with Jennifer's migraines too, because you can imagine how much fun it is to wake up in the morning to discover, with no advance warning, that you're going to be single parenting for the day, whilst also having to go to work and have a sick wife to care for. Mostly, when that happens, I just take a deep breath and switch off my emotions and get on with it. And I have to confess that on more than one occasion, I've had the thought cross my mind, maybe God wants to teach her something through this migraine. And if so, I wish she'd hurry up and learn. Shows how selfish I am, I guess. You see, her pain was messing up my plans. My reaction was frustration and resentment. But you never know how your response to your weakness and your other people around you's weakness can impact other people. When Lorraine had her stroke, I saw real love demonstrated. Paul Abeta was incredibly unwell from his illness. But in the midst of his weakness, he daily showed love to Lorraine, ensuring that she was looked after. This was a really practical love, which is what you promise when you get married, saying, "In sickness, in health, till death do us part." And God used that to change me, observing Paul and his actions and his love for Lorraine. Because it made me think perhaps God had a different plan in all of this with Jennifer's migraines. And if God's aim is not just for my comfort or the fulfillment of my plans and ambitions, but rather to develop my character, to make me more Christ-like, then maybe my thought should change from he's trying to teach Jennifer something to he's trying to teach me something. And perhaps I need to be the one who needs to hurry up and learn. Because I've only got the frustration of plans being messed up for the day. She's suffering in serious pain. Maybe I need to learn what love really means as I care for her. Our current sermon series has been on the theme of it's okay to not be okay. And today's theme is weakness, as we've read in the passage this morning. And in Acts chapter 18, we read about Paul's trip to Corinth. It wasn't a quick in-out visit. He stayed there for about a year and a half. And during that time, he built up a vibrant church. But it was not without its problems. And after he left, some teachers came to the church, telling them, don't listen to Paul. And throughout the book of 1-2 Corinthians, we can pick up many hints of the criticisms that have been levelled against him by these false teachers. It appears that the apostle may have been short and ugly and had impairment of vision. The Corinthians thought maybe he was a bit unreliable and not a very impressive speaker, certainly not like these other teachers. And Paul talks about this thorn in the flesh. He never exactly explains what it was. And Paul's second letter to the Corinthians was written to counter these false teachers, not because he felt the need to defend himself, so much as he was concerned that these false teachers were leading the young believers away from Jesus. And what's interesting about Paul's defence is that while he makes reference to the criticisms against them, he doesn't fight back by criticising his opponents. Instead, in today's passage, he's confessing that he is weak, not trying to hide it, and that he doesn't want to hide it at all. Rather, he wants to delight in his weakness and boast about it. It's just so counterintuitive. It's so against what we've grown up with. I'm not sure that's what my reaction would be. In fact, I think moaning about my knee problems has been the closest I've been to admitting my own weaknesses at all. So how was the Apostle Paul able to delight in his weaknesses? Verse 9 says, "My power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me." When he was at his weakest, then God's power was most evident in his life. God did not require the apostle to be a superhero. God did not require him to be strong, good-looking, or eloquent, or in any way brilliant to be able to use him. God just needed him to be willing to go. Like Christine was sharing this morning, God just needed him to be willing to go, like Mary was. And the less able Paul was, the more dependent he was upon God to speak through him. Just like Mary, she was young and had really no idea what was going to be happening, but she was just willing to trust in God. See, depending on God in our weakness is a theme which runs all the way through the Bible. If we think back to Abraham, God chose him and Sarah to give birth to a nation, even though Sarah was too old to have children. And God didn't use Abraham because of his great strength or faith, but in spite of his lack of it. And then Jacob and Esau. God didn't choose Esau, the man's man, the strong one. Instead, he chose Jacob, mama's boy. And just when Jacob thought that he was a self-made man, returning to his family with 12 sons and huge flocks and herds, God met him in the night and struggled with him and crippled him so that he walked with a limp for the rest of his life. God's message to Jacob was that he was loved and chosen not because of his great strength and his cunning, but in spite of his weakness and in spite of the fact that he was really just a deceiver. See, that theme runs all the way through the Bible. You think of King David. The prophet Samuel anointed him, but when he went to his house, he had 7 older brothers who were much better looking and stronger than him. But God chose David, the smallest and weakest in the family. God does not need you to be strong. He wants you to recognize your need of him and that your strength comes solely from your dependence upon him. The weaker you are, the more likely you are to depend on him. So how does God show us that his grace is sufficient for us? What about those days when you feel as if you can't go on, that you doubt whether you'll have the strength to make it to the end of the week, let alone to the end of the problem? If you remember the story of the Israelites in the wilderness, how much manna did God provide for them? Enough for one day at a time. And how did Jesus teach the disciples to pray for their physical needs? Give us today our daily bread. And Lamentations 3, 22 to 23 says, "Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness." God's grace to the Israelites in the desert, and God's grace to Paul with his thorn in the flesh. And God's grace and compassion to you is new every morning. He doesn't give us all we need in one go any more than I would give my children all their meals for the rest of their lives in one day. He gives us his grace afresh every morning, enough to see us through that day. And the next morning, he gives us the grace that we need to see us through that day. And again, the next, and after that. We don't need to see the light at the end of the tunnel. We just need to see God's grace, which will see us through to the end of this day. And trust that tomorrow, he'll do the same for us again. As I grow older, I'm realizing my weakness and inability more and more day by day. Whether it be the growing range of aches and pains, or just the general lack of hours in the week and the pressures and stresses, I'm becoming increasingly aware of my dependence on God and on others. I'm not a superhero, but I still want to do it all myself. But I'm seeing my need of God, and that God doesn't need superheroes or any kind of heroes. He just needs people to trust in him. And as we start this Advent season, we remember that it was through Jesus' weakness in being born as a vulnerable baby in a stable in Bethlehem that God dwelt among us. And it was through Jesus' weakness in dying on a cross that we may know God and have hope for our future. God's desire is for you in your weakness to come to him and to find your strength entirely in him, because his strength is made perfect in your weakness.